Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Black Wealth Creation Radio. It is your host, Sean Hill, and I am excited. Oh, man, I tell you, I am so excited about tonight's show. It is going to be awesome, and I am looking forward to it. I met this gentleman, I would say about 3 or 4 months ago, and was just so impressed with how he's always giving. He's always sharing his knowledge and just has such a wealth of knowledge to share and to give. And what a better subject. If you haven't already gotten your tax returns, that may mean you owe money or you just need a little more help. And so we have that help for you tonight. We are going to take your tax questions and make sure that you get them in. We're going to be on for an hour tonight. So, get them in quickly if you have them. If not, I'll just take all the help I can get because I've got plenty of them. And so we're excited tonight. I am flying solo. My wonderful host, Louisa Sanderson, is not here tonight. She's off taking care of other business, so we send her our prayers and wish her the best and looking forward to her return. It's always a little bit challenging when I have to go solo because I don't have anybody to kind of rein me in and keep me under control, so I have to try to calm down and control myself. But just exciting and glad to, that she's taking care of whatever she's taking care of. I know she's handling her business, and we're going to handle ours right here, right tonight, because we're going to keep it to an hour tonight. We don't have a business of the week. We don't have a nonprofit of the week, because I really wanted to share this time with you and get in as many questions as possible. And without further ado, I am going to bring our guest host. Well, I was almost calling him a guest host, but he's a good friend of mine. I'm going to bring Cozy onto the call. Cozy, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. Hey, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. I know this is a busy time of year for you, so the fact that you're giving us any of your time is much appreciated, but I think it's really relevant, what you have to share. But before we do that, I always like to give our audience a little bit of a feel of who the person is. So can you tell us a little bit about your history and what you do and whatever you want us to know?
Sure. My name is Cozy Johnson. I currently live in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'm originally from New York City area. I've been doing taxes, for close to 2 decades, but in terms of my current business, Johnson Consultants and Associates, I've been running that business now for 7 years. I do tax preparation, which, of course, now is a popular time for that. And then I also do monthly bookkeeping and accounting analysis for small businesses. And also another area that has kind of developed within the last 2 months, and that's individuals who they want their personal finances bookkept and budgeted. I guess because there's so many people who are so busy these days and in such a rush that, people don't have the time, and people are not, sometimes paying their bills on time, having late bills, late fees, which is affecting their credit, which can affect you buying a home, getting a loan for a business, so forth and so on. So that's a little bit about myself.
Oh, man, that is fantastic. I know you've been doing the other things, but I did know about this new project that you're working on. And that, you know what, that sounds incredible. Have you been getting a lot of interest in? I know this is tax season, so maybe not so much so far, but how is that part coming along?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
I was just asking you mentioned a new product that a new service that you're offering. I know this is tax season, so I know you're busy with that. Just wanted to find out how is that new piece coming along?
It's coming along nicely. Some people have started to ask for that type of service that previously I had not come across. So, you know, it's a small number, so which is nice because it's some folks, but not too much with tax season, being fairly heavy.
Great,
So
great.
I can't complain.
Go ahead, buddy.
No, I was just saying I definitely can't complain.
Man, that's great. Well, let me give out the number so people who want to call in and get some information, they can call in. Like I said, if not, I'll just hog all the attention to myself. The number is going to be 347-850-8677. Just press 1 if you have a question for Cozy. And also our chat room is open, so you can get on our line and get in our chat room and ask a question there. I see the ever faithful DP in the chat room, Digital Pro. Good evening, brother. It's always great to see you supporting the show, which you always do, and we always appreciate that. So, Coach, what are some of the mistakes? We'll start kind of just to the bad side, I guess. What are some of the mistakes that you see people making their taxes this time of year, or any time, really?
Some mistakes that can be made can be something as simple as putting in the wrong, just simply the wrong numbers in terms of their Social Security number, whether somebody can be claimed or not, so that one person can go ahead and send in a tax return in the family, and the second person does so, hoping to claim that other member as a dependent, but the person maybe is trying to get a school loan for college, and they're trying to claim independence so that they can get more financial aid. But in doing so, that gets in the way of the parent or other individual who is trying to claim them as a dependent, and things can go haywire. Other times, for something a little bit more advanced, if a person is a small business, let's say they're a limited liability corporation, and instead of just the one member, it's actually two members, so it's a partnership. Sometimes a person can go to their business bank account, and somebody may have made an investment into that bank account, but not being careful, they wind up making that investment look like earned income. So something that's just simply an investment winds up being taxed as income, obviously affects the pocketbook.
Right. Wow. Now, which one do you handle more, or is it kind of split evenly between, individual taxes and people with businesses?
I would say it's pretty close to 50-50.
Okay.
And probably one reason why is that there are some folks who are filing as an individual or family, but they also happen to own a small business as what's termed a single member limited liability company or a sole proprietorship. And when you have that situation, then you're filing for that person a 1040 personal form, but you're attaching a Schedule C with it. So in returns like that, it's both business and person. But yeah, I would say about 50-50.
Well, great. Now, what are some of the things that it's not too late for us to do? You know, there are a lot of things that may, you know, we kind of written off in 2014, but is it too late to make any kind of changes or anything additional to even or either one individual or the business taxes?
Well, a change possibly can be if a person has not filed their taxes yet and, you know, they're looking, you know, their receipts and something that they had already counted up that maybe they missed, that could be an extra expense that can be deducted on the taxes that, you know, they can go ahead and put in, you know, when the taxes will be prepared. If the taxes already have been prepared, of course, an individual can do an amendment, which that definitely has happened sometimes where maybe a company do the majority of their business through PayPal on the internet. A lot of times, you know, if you charge somebody $200 for whatever service or goods and you get paid through PayPal, fees are going to come out. I think like the $200, it's roughly around like, I think, $7. And, you know, you do that, you know, like 100 times, well, that's $700.
That's right.
And I've seen people where, you know, that has been missed. So they have gone and sent in an amendment to, you know, to get that extra income.
Oh, man, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And then, of course, a person has basically 3 years to go ahead and, you know, amend their tax.
Okay. And that's kind of what that leads right into the next question I was going to ask you. So would that be 3 years from their 2014 taxes, or when do we start counting that 3 years going backward?
Yeah, that's a good question. You have to be careful because, like, okay, right now 2014 taxes are being done. So, like, if a person were to go back right now, you know, they can go and deal with 14, 13, 2013, and 2012 taxes. That can be amended, and that can be e-filed on the personal level. But once it hits April 15th, then 2012 to amend or to, you know, to e-file. I should make one note that I forgot about that. You know, if a person has not done the 2012 taxes right now and they go ahead and they file it, it can be e-filed. But if you're going to amend, you can still do so for 2012, but you would have to mail it in you know, paper file.
Okay.
You can't e-file amendments.
Gotcha. Those have to be mailed in. Now, when you're sending in amendments, I know you already talked about 2012. Other than April 15th. Is there any other deadlines or anything, other restrictions? Maybe let's say for 2013, so we kind of take that off the table. So let's say something happened in 2013, and now you want to amend that. What would be the process to do that?
For something in 2013?
Yes.
It would be the same process that you would go back to 2013, make sure that you get the correct form for the correct year, and you can either, with some tax software, you can go to that year and pull it up on your computer and print it out, or, you know, you can just simply go to a local IRS office. I'm not sure. I really haven't done it because I usually use my own tax software to get parts of the IRS website, but I've never really dealt with that, so I couldn't honestly say.
Well, you know what I would say? I would just say come to you. That way we could just eliminate all the problems. Just let you handle it.
That works for me.
Well, Cozy, what are some things that, be overlooked? There's some deductions that we may not know about that, you know, guys like you who are in the know, who do this for a profession, that you may have access to, that you may have not that you have access to it, but because you're in it, you just have a greater knowledge that what are some things that we may miss?
One thing that comes to mind right away is on the personal level, where an individual, which I deal with a lot because, like I said, I live in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is right next door to Fort Bragg, the humongous military base. And
gotcha.
I have a lot of people who they've been stationed here for a little bit, coming over from Oklahoma or Tennessee or what have you. And when that happens, sometimes the place that a person leaves before they move to North Carolina, they still have a house that they have to pay mortgage on, so they go ahead and in some cases they'll rent out the house to cover the mortgage payment. And sometimes what people forget is that when you are covering that mortgage, you know, it might make if your monthly mortgage is $1,500 and you charge $1,500 for rent, you know, a person could say to themselves, well, okay, that cancels it out, so I don't have to, you know, worry about doing anything else. But when you are renting out a home, and you have to use what's called Schedule E as an elephant, you have to make sure to put in the different deductions off of the income that you've made. And it's important to do, and people can overlook it. It's important because that income, it gets taxed.
Gotcha.
And you have to really be aware because no taxes are taken out. So it's almost like a person being an independent contractor where, you know, taxes are not taken out. And aside from things like the interest, you know, paid on the home for the year, insurance, different taxes, the other thing that can be overlooked a lot of times, and that's the depreciation of the house.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of times people just simply don't know about doing so. In other cases, it's a situation where a person just doesn't understand what they're dealing with. And what I mean by that is that, you know, to start off depreciation for a home, any tax software you use is going to ask for what is the cost basis of, you know, of the home. And to a lot of people, you know, you might as well be talking in Greek.
I would be one of those.
Yeah. But what that simply winds up being in normal language is what you originally paid for the house plus your closing costs minus the value of the land itself, and the reason that is done is that the house that's built on the land can appreciate and depreciate in value. But the land that it's on never depreciates.
Gotcha.
And that's why you have to subtract it. And then once you get that amount, then you go ahead and, you know, you put that on the what's called the Form 4562 to carry it over to the Schedule E. And then you go ahead and you get that deduction.
Wow. Now, that sounded really complicated. That sounds like something that would be a whole lot, and maybe somebody has that type of knowledge. That's great. I'm glad we got guys like you that have that type of knowledge. And I think, like you said, that's something that people probably fall into and don't realize that it's a taxable event. They're just thinking, hey, rent out my old place, and get that money, give it to my mortgage, so it's an even deal. So it's, you know, no harm, no foul.
Right.
And really, that's not the case at all. Is there anything new in this year that has changed from previous years? Anything new or anything different in filing this year's taxes?
There's always some little differences, but I guess the one like kind of obvious thing that's different this year, and that's the what's called the standard deduction that a person can get when they're filling out the personal tax, and what the standard deduction is the amount of whether an individual files married filing together, head of household, married filing separately. And I know that for married filing together this year, it's $12,400 standard deduction, where last year I believe it was $12,200. It's not a huge jump, but you know, when you're looking at trying to count every penny, then that makes the $200, more so significant. So that's one of the changes, that things were slightly put up last. I don't remember offhand, but I know that sometimes the rate of cents per mile when a person is, when they have their own business, or if they are driving to a nonprofit organization to, donate, money or what have you, sometimes those things can change as well. It's usually some small changes that come about that a lot of times people, for the most part, really won't even pay attention to. One thing that has not happened yet, as far as I'm aware of, that could be a big change, and that's I know there was some talk, some speculation a couple of months ago about people who are employees of a company where, sometimes some employees could take advantage of the employee lunches. An employee could go ahead and have a nice luncheon, for something, business related or what have you. But I know there was talk about the change being that a person could still have that employee lunch, but that they were talking about that employee lunch being added to an employee's W-2 as income. Which would have been, if that ever does happen, that would be a huge incentive to leave those work lunches alone. Because, you know, if that gets charged as income and if tax is not taken out, then, you've got a not too nice situation to deal with when it comes time to file your taxes.
Oh, wow. And that's one of those things that can just definitely sneak up on you that you otherwise just really wouldn't even think about.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, man. Anything else? Well, let me ask you this, because I was wondering, I said I was going to ask you this last week about this show this week. I recently heard about an actor, and I forget whose name it was, Robert De Niro. I think it was Robert De Niro. I believe that's who I saw the story about. And he got hit with a pretty big tax bill. It was $4 million, I believe. And I've often wondered if, you know, as a citizen and just regular person, and I'm sure he has some intelligence like we all do, but we're not specialists in this. As just a regular citizen, when you have someone prepare your taxes, and I hope he did. I hope he's making this kind of money. He's not doing, you know, TurboTax. But let's just for the sake of argument, let's say he went to a huge accounting firm or some firm or even anybody other than you, because I know you would have done him right. But let's say he went to some accounting firm and they prepared it and they did everything. They submitted all the paperwork. And, of course, he doesn't know all the ins and outs and taxes. How does it work that he's still held liable in those situations when maybe a third party or another person prepares his taxes?
That's because the way that the law is stated, first it has to be shown that there's a mistake that would be made by, you know, an accountant or H&R Block or what have you. But even if that happens, it's a situation where the IRS, when they look at the preparer, the tax preparer, and the person that the tax was being prepared for, unless the tax person maliciously, intently went to ruin the taxes, the law is that the client, the IRS is going to approach. And they can basically say to the client, well, you know, you left things in the hand of Joe Blow accountant, you know, too bad, so sad, you know, we're still going to come after you. It's unfortunate, but it just comes down to the relationship that a person has between themselves and the tax preparer. And that's where people like myself and my other colleague, John, in Michigan, where we come in handy, because we're more personalized. And so I'm going to communicate fully with all of my clients who I work with their taxes, so that before I send things off, double-checking things, and that will help to minimize any mistakes. And for all the money that somebody like Robert De Niro has, he, if anything, ought to have some accountant that communicates with him, is at his beck and call. But unfortunately, a lot of times what happens is basically one word, and that's time. Somebody like Robert De Niro, he probably travels all over the world, all over the country. He probably just says, hey, just go ahead and take care of whatever. And people like that, I'll work with them, but quite honestly, I prefer to work with folks who they're looking for some knowledge or, you know, some communication, as opposed to the type of person who just goes ahead and brings you a shoebox full of receipts and, you know, and calls it a day. And I don't like that because if there's something that I notice, something important, and I want to get a hold of that client, but they feel like they've done their job already and they've just handed off the receipts and, you know, they're, you know, they can't be reached, contacted, that's not a good situation because then, you know, that tax has to be prepared and I may not have all the information that I need from that client, but I can't get a hold of them. So I'm kind of at a quandary then as to, you know, do I try and stand pat, file an extension, and hope and pray I can get a hold of the person, you know, what have you. So that's why I don't have it in any kind of a contract, but I stress the importance of communication. I feel it's important, one, and then two, I don't want somebody coming back at me basically saying, well, he said this, you know, he said that, and it's not true. And with miscommunication, there can be a lot of misunderstanding.
I think you kind of said one of the best things to do is have that open communication between you and the person. If you're obviously if you're a client, the person preparing your taxes, to have a good obviously a good relationship, and hopefully you have one where you're not just getting the taxes done, but you're getting educated. And I think that's one of the things that we talked before that I really like about you and your services. You take it upon almost like a, I would say, a stewardship, where you look at it as, hey, I need to let this person know that I'm doing this, but I also need to let them know why. I also need to let them know what's happening, what's going on, and hopefully how you can prevent maybe some situations going forward, because a lot of times if I've already done it, it's too late now. But if I know better, let's say if we knew better, we'd do better going forward. I can make different choices, and I think that's what you're telling. Is that what you're talking about, Cozy?
Basically, yeah. That importance of communication. It's a basic thing, but it can't be stated enough, the importance of having that communication. Because you never know when some small thing's gonna come up. And because of the lack of communication, that can wind up, costing someone. Or even if, like, let's say it doesn't cost the client money, but it can cost them what they thought they were going to receive, let's say, as a refund. A perfect example of that is I have a client that I did their 2014 tax, and it's a couple, and the one fiance was helping the other fiance financially with them starting their business in 2014. And they poured a lot of money into helping their fiancé start their business. And the fiancé, the business owner, didn't make much money for the year. And the amount of expenses that the boyfriend helped with was way, way more than the money that was earned. And the boyfriend got angry at me, thinking I didn't do the taxes right because he wasn't getting much money back. And, you know, I had I before I sent off the before I sent off the taxes, I explained to him that if you only make $300 for the business and your expenses is like $10,000, it doesn't mean you're gonna get back $9,700 in a refund. And that's what the person was thinking. And if anything, I don't know the exact numbers, but once that first $300 basically gets canceled out and you're operating at a loss, anything deductible after that is going to be fairly minute. A person who's thinking, like you said, oh, dollar for dollar, they're going to have a big payday.
Right.
Not going to happen. And, I hated to be the bearer of bad news, but I had to be honest with the guy. And, and I said to them, kind of half serious, half joking, I told him, you guys need to go ahead and get married, because as a married couple, it's still not going to be dollar for dollar, but that can kind of help to go into the tax base of the personal taxes, because the business is operating, so far under at a loss. And if they do get married, I hope they don't get married because I mentioned, but
I don't know, boy. You're looking at dealing with the IRS. That might be a good incentive. I don't know if they want to do it just because of that, but boy, that's pretty convincing. I don't know. That may keep some marriages together. I don't know. That might be a good incentive to kind of go to the counseling instead of go to the court. I don't know. Wow.
Absolutely.
Oh, I think you might have saved some. Thank you. Go ahead, buddy.
Another thing too that when you asked me earlier about something that's overlooked. Another thing that's also overlooked that just popped in my mind, and that's a couple who's married. One coming into the marriage, one of the spouses has previous either child support or some other financial obligation. And the couple doesn't want to file as married filing together because they don't want any refund that they think that they're going to get to be taken away by their spouse's, financial issues. And what some people will do, which is not legal and is overlooked, people think that, instead of married filing together, I'll just file head of household. And that's a no-no. If you're married, you can either file married filing together or married filing separately. That's it. And folks who go about doing the head of household thing, the only thing I can tell them is that they just gotta hope that, either the IRS or whatever State Department of Revenue, doesn't catch on.
Wow.
Because then, there'll have to be some money.
And speaking of money payback, we definitely know it's tough to owe the IRS money and back taxes. And I think sometimes once you look at the numbers, the back taxes and fees and, it's probably going to equal up on the penalties and fees and interest probably ends up more than the actual taxes that they may have owed. If we have some, our listeners in that situation, other than cutting a deal, because that sounds a little bit dubious, but I mean it is. If you enter a payment agreement with the IRS, that's one thing. Other than that, is there anything that a person can do in that situation to kind of, help them, other than that, I'll just throw myself on the mercy of the IRS and hope that you guys have some mercy on me.
Well, the best thing to do is if it turns out you owe money, that the IRS claims you owe money, the first thing before even cutting a deal is a person has to make sure if they truly owe that money.
Mm.
The reason I say that is a lot of times the IRS can kind of tend to overestimate what you owe.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes what they say you owe is exactly what you owe, but there are cases where that's not the situation. And when that happens, I'll say to the person, well, for, whatever year that the government is talking about, did you do your taxes for that year, first of all? And if you did, let's look at it, make sure that it was done correctly. And if not, then let's do that tax and see what it comes up with. That year of taxes might be done, and it may come out that a person owed just $50 as opposed to the, $6,000 that the IRS says that they owe. But if the money truly is owed, then the best thing you can do is to try to work out a deal with the IRS, whether you do it yourself or with a tax lawyer. The only thing with a tax lawyer, I definitely advocate a tax lawyer if it's a very heavy, complicated situation. But if it's something basic that perhaps a person could do themselves, sometimes all a person has to do is fill out a form that's called I believe it's the 433 OIC, which is offer in compromise. I think it's $100. You fill it out, you send it in. The IRS has 30 days to decide on your offer. In some cases, I have known where a tax lawyer just simply went themselves and got that offer in compromise form and filled it out for their client and sent it in, which is, something that could have been done themselves or by somebody else for a lot cheaper. Because when you have a tax lawyer in the mix, you're looking at paying some serious bucks. A person can do some basic things on their own. And then, of course, too, if it's usually these tax lawyers that talk about pennies on the dollar, they won't accept any cases less than $10,000 owed.
Mm-hmm.
So, if with penalties and interest you owe $7,000, a tax lawyer is not going to take your case. And in a situation like that there, I would say spend that $100 to see if, you can maybe, say, pay $3,000 instead of $7,000.
Gotcha.
Because if you can, Well, at $3,000 plus the $100 you spend on that form, you basically are paying $3,100 as opposed to $7,000. And, I'll take that $3,100 any day. You know, I suppose. But see, a lot of times what happens, though, when the IRS calls you or sends you that letter in the mail, we're human beings. People get scared. And,
oh, yes. You start thinking about jail. You start thinking about Al Capone. Oh, yeah. Well, oh, yes.
And a lot of times two reactions come to mind. One reaction is a person, like, just kind of literally goes into hiding,
mm-hmm.
hoping that it's not going to get to the point where things are going to be levied, unless I have seen some folks where they just totally live off the cash and live in an apartment, and some people even own a company. And just do everything for cash, and year after year goes by, and they're just not paying any tax whatsoever. And then, of course, the other thing that people do is they see the letter, they get scared, they get flustered, and before thinking about if they really owe this money or if they could maybe strike a deal, they're just like, hey, I just want to get this over with as quickly as possible and pay whatever. And depending upon the IRS agent, you will have some agents that they will mention themselves, well, maybe you could pay this amount or that amount. It really depends upon the individual agent and what they're trying to collect.
Gotcha. Now, let's say, for instance, you do enter into one of these agreements with the IRS, and you sign off on it, and you get your payment plan and things going like that. Do you have any recourse after you actually enter into the agreement? Is there any changes, or is it one and done? Hey, once you sign on the dotted line, this is the agreement, and you've agreed to it, and we're not making any changes.
I believe that changes can be made. You have to make sure to be very clear communication-wise about any changes that you're looking to make. And I obviously do so not only on the phone, but absolutely in writing.
Mm.
Because you never know when an IRS agent can say, he never called me, never heard from him. I don't know what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, aside from all the fancy overnight express and FedEx and everything else, that's where, if anything, you want to do the basic thing of sending the mail certified for them to sign for it. So you have some form of proof of your written communication. Or if you fax it to them, fax them a letter. Because if you make an agreement to pay back, let's say, $400 a month, and you all of a sudden come across a hardship and you can't pay $400 a month anymore, if you can't, you can't do it. And they have to know about it. And it's different if you have the money and you just don't want to pay. But if
right.
you simply don't have the money, and you're being honest about it, hopefully reasonably that, you can make a change, say, well, I can't pay $400 a month right now. I can maybe make $200 a month. And then, as soon as things get better, then I can go back to the $400 a month. So I believe that, things don't have to be necessarily set in stone. You know, because if an IRS agent says, hey, this is set in stone, you got to give me this money, and you don't have it, you know, you can't get blood out of a turnip, as the saying goes.
Exactly. I think the concern then is the jail time, you know, because we know that, you know, that they can carry a pretty big stick. And,
right.
You know, is there certain things that, speaking of not jail, but just audits, because I think just that word sets people's nerves on edge. Are there certain things that you can do to make you more likely to be audited than other, just the average person?
Well, a lot of times the audits can be random, but if a person is filling out a tax return and, you know, someone at the IRS looks at the numbers and it makes sense to them, then that's fine. But, like, if somebody goes and, you know, they're trying to cut down on the amount of tax that they owe, and so they go ahead and they put something down like, hey, for last year, we donated $10,000 to our church. Now, if a couple only earn, let's say, $40,000 combined income, and they have three kids, but they put down $10,000 to church, that's not going to look too good. And I have seen cases in the past where somebody, you know, showed me like a previous year's taxes that they did with someone else, and, you know, and I said to them, well, you know, just keep in mind that the IRS can look back on, you know, previous year's taxes, and you know, they just looked at each other and kind of nodded. They knew, and you know, I mean, there could have been a chance where maybe somehow, some way, they really were able to, you know, donate that money, but it didn't seem very likely. And, you know, when I made the comment that I did, their reaction pretty much seemed to suggest that the figure was inflated.
Wow. You know, boy, I tell you, we are almost up on an hour, but there's one thing I really want to cover before we got off of here, and that's, and, you know, I think you touched on it a little bit earlier when we talked about, you know, the lawyers, and, hey, there's this great new IRS program that's, you know, they're being lenient, so, you know, come on in, and the IRS reform, and IRS this and that and the other, and you mentioned if it's above $10,000. From your experience, is that a good deal? Do you think that would be a good deal for an individual to go that route with these? I know a lot of it depends on the reputation of the company doing it, because anybody can just say they can do it. But would
right.
that be something that would be good or beneficial, or is it buyer beware? I guess what I'm saying.
Well, buyers should always beware in general, anyway. But sometimes, and I forgot the name, it's like the Fair something. You know, I've heard it on the radio a few times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the commercial says, don't mess with the IRS, you know, and that whole deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, any kind of resource that a person can use for their benefit, to definitely try and do so. Still, buyer beware. You know, make sure who you're dealing with is credible, and not so much just in terms of references, but you want to make sure in hearing from the person that they know what they're talking about, they know what they're doing. Because even if a person has a bunch of credentials, it doesn't mean that they know what they're doing. They can have all the fancy accolades and everything and wind up burying you financially with the IRS. So you want to try to have the feeling that person is competent. But any kind of program, you know, if it truly does come from the IRS, you know, a person should do their homework and finding out more about whatever opportunity. But overall, the IRS is a business like other businesses, and, you know, people don't always pay them as they're supposed to, and they have to collect. And, you know, going ahead and looking at being lenient, at least somewhat, can be a way for them to at least collect on some of the money that's owed to them. If a person owes $5,000 and, you know, the IRS knows very well they're not going to get that $5,000 from the person, well, at least, you know, they could be a little lean and say, okay, well, you know, instead of that $5,000, how about $2,500? Which, you know, if that happens, then that's basically a win-win situation, because you have the taxpayer happy because they paid less money than what they originally owed, and then the IRS can be happy because they're getting $2,500 as opposed to maybe not getting anything at all. You know, there are some people out there, I don't know how they do it, you know, bless their hearts, but there's some people out there, they're not worried about paying the IRS at all. And,
right.
You know, years can go by and not paid one penny.
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, the IRS, I'm sure, has dealt with a lot of folks like that, and probably because of that, maybe that's why they are looking at being, a little bit more lenient. And also, especially, too, with the way that the, economy has been, especially since, 2008, that, you know, you've got people that, so many people who are working, you know, two, maybe three jobs just to make ends meet. So they're really not going to have much left over to, you know, pay the IRS. So, just whatever person chooses, just be careful.
As we say, buyer beware. Do it at your own risk. I love it. I love it. One more thing before we go, and man, I've been so enjoyed this hour, and hopefully our audience has gotten something from this. I hope it's blessed them as much as it's blessed me. A lot of our listeners are business owners, kind of like yourself, and I've heard, you know, both sides of the home office deduction and things like that. Is there anything that business owners do that really can kind of be send up a red flag for the IRS? So is there anything that they're looking for in per se, and that said, okay, when I see this, this is more likely to get audited than something else? Is there anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. thing a person should beware about is if a person has a home-based business, let's say it's just getting off the ground, but a person makes sure to count their utilities, their you know, house payment and, you know, so forth and so on. One thing I would be careful about is a person that, let's say, uses a telephone bill where, you know, the telephone is used for business, but it's also used for personal reasons. You know, a tax client has to be very careful because technically a person is going to have to look back at every phone call and see which ones was for business, which one was for personal, and then come about, you know, a certain percentage as to what was business, opposed to just saying, oh, the whole thing was, you know, what's for business. And in fact, I, if a person can afford to do so, I say have two cell phones or you know, two telephone lines, you know, one specifically for personal and the other one for business, so that there's not any question marks when it comes to the home deduction and just how much that somebody is truly deducting.
Gotcha. It's those little things that just make life so much easier, not only for you who that may have to prepare it, but also for the for that business owner. And when he's thinking about doing things the right way, because we all want to do, of course, we know taxes aren't going anywhere anytime soon. And so we have to learn how to deal with them. And, man, I tell you, I'm learning more. And the more I hang out with you, the more I learn. So I just thank you for hanging out with us tonight. Before we go, before we get off of here, I want to make sure that you get all the business that you can get. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
The first way a person can get in contact with me is my telephone number is 910-964-3726. A person can also go to my website, www.johnsonjcaservices.com, and also a person can contact me by email. My business email address is Kosi, K-G-O-S-I, at johnsonconsultants.net, and I can even be looked up on under Johnson Consultants and Associates under Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. So many ways to contact me. So don't be shy and give me a jingle.
I know that's right. Many ways, one person, one great, great guy. And thank you, DP, in the chat room. He said that program we were talking about with the IRS, and it's called the Fresh Start Initiative. So, you know, check that out. Look it up online. Do your research. If it sounds like something that you want to be a part of or that you can benefit from, definitely, definitely look into that. And we want you to get the best deal that you can get, and make sure you pay your taxes, because we don't want you to have any problems. Kosi, thank you again, my friend. I know this time has been valuable to our listeners. Thank you, because I know your time is valuable. You have a lot that you could be doing this time of year, coming real close to April 15th, almost a little over a month away. And I know things are going to start getting hot and heavy for you. So, my buddy, thank you again. And it's been a pleasure. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And as we always say here on Black Wealth Creation Radio, build black, buy black, and be black. Thank you, everybody. Y'all have a wonderful week and a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye-bye.